Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. NATO meeting expresses concerns about Russia. NATO Secretary General says the alliance's increased forward presence in Eastern Europe sends a clear signal to any would-be aggressor. In Brussels, before a two-day NATO defense ministers meeting, this is Jan Stoltenberg referring to Russia.
I expect the defense ministers to agree to enhance our forward presence in the eastern part of our alliance. This will send a clear signal. NATO will respond as one to any aggression against any ally. We have already significantly enhanced our presence and readiness of our forces.
Since Russia's seizure of Crimea almost 2 years ago, the Western military alliance has been increasingly concerned that Moscow would rapidly invade Poland or the Baltic states. British Defense Secretary Michael Fallon repeated that concern on arrival Wednesday in Brussels.
NATO faces pressures now on its eastern border and in the Mediterranean. And today we need to unite around a clear plan to deploy troops and ships to deter any aggression and the threats that we've seen. And we want to see faster deployment of those troops.
NATO defense ministers are also expected to discuss Turkey's request for NATO help to slow the influx of migrants into Europe. The director of U.S. National Intelligence, James Clapper, told U.S. lawmakers yesterday the United States faces an array of security threats this year.
ISIL has demonstrated sophisticated attack tactics and tradecraft. ISIL, including its 8 established and several more emerging branches, has become the preeminent global terrorist threat.
This is VOA News. Human rights group Amnesty International says more needs to be done to strengthen the UN mission in the Central African Republic. It's called MINUSCA. In a new report, Amnesty argues weaknesses within the mission were exposed during violence last September. Nick Long reports from Ban Ki that MINUSCA says it has learned from that experience.
Somebody has to stop.
Amnesty's report pays tribute to MINUSCA forces who it says have saved many lives, helped prevent the Central African Republic from escalating further, and often displayed bravery at significant cost. But it says gaps in their capacity were cruelly exposed during 3 days of armed group violence in September when 75 civilians were killed in the capital, Bangui. Commenting on the report Wednesday, MINUSCA spokesman Vladimir Montero said the UN High Commission for Human Rights also raised concerns about MINUSCA's late reaction to the events in September. We welcome this report, says Montero, because it helps us see things more clearly. At the same time, it confirms that MINUSCA's intervention has saved lives. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
MINUSCA will be on guard for any unrest as the CAR holds a presidential runoff vote this Sunday. Iraq says its forces have completely recaptured the city of Ramadi and surrounding areas from Islamic State. The IS group seized the provincial capital last May. Iraq's ambassador to the United States tells VOA that Iraqi forces will now focus on retaking Mosul, which lost to the Islamic State in 2014. The South African opposition Tuesday asked the Constitutional Court to rule on whether President Jacob Zuma broke the law by spending over $20 million on a state-funded security upgrade of his private home. Now, those upgrades, according to a 2014 government report, they included a swimming pool and an amphitheater. Last week, the president said he was prepared to repay some of the expenses on the upgrades. The African Union force in Somalia warns Al-Shabaab militants are planning to disguise themselves as AU soldiers to carry out attacks, including atrocities in parts of Somalia, controlled by the AU force in Somalia's federal government. The goal, it says, is to turn Somalis against AMISOM, which has protected the government for the past 9 years. And Human Rights Watch is calling on Uganda to publicly state that security forces are legally bound to protect freedom of assembly and the right to peaceful protest in the days leading up to the nation's February 18th election. This is Joe Palca reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Hees Wuheeb. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
It was very clear that the peace implementation is not being prioritized by the two sides. And we know that that is the answer to starting to address the humanitarian crisis that we see looming in South Sudan.
That's U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thompson-Greenfield speaking on the conflict in South Sudan. Details coming up.
Also, a U.N. official says there's no evidence that either side in Burundi is operating in a refugee camp in Tanzania. And in Kenya, six elephants have died in 1 week under unclear circumstances.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, a UN refugee agency official says there is no evidence that Burundi security officials or political opposition recruiters are operating in refugee camps in the region. Burundi's government has charged that rebels are recruiting combatants in camps in Nduta, Tanzania, which is run by the UNHCR. However, the UNHCR representative for Tanzania told France's state-run radio there is no evidence of security officials or opposition recruiters conducting operations in these camps. Joyce Menz-Cole said UNHCR has done its best to maintain the civil nature of the camps.
A high-ranking U.S. State Department official says the U.S. is encouraging both sides in the South Sudan conflict to work towards peace. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield says the issue of South Sudan civil war was brought up at the recent AU meeting in Addis Ababa.
At the start, we were incredibly engaged with both sides when we were at the AU to push them, urge them, encourage them to make the right decisions in moving forward on the implementation of the peace agreement. Our special envoy for Sudan and South Sudan, Don Booth, is out in the region as we speak. We had intense meetings with President Mohai, who has been leading the efforts of the UN and others to push the parties back to the implementation table. We were very disappointed at the responses that we got. It was very clear that the peace implementation is not being prioritized by the two sides. And we know that that is the answer to starting to address the humanitarian crisis that we see looming in South Sudan. What we have said is that these leaders have to care about the impacts on of this war on their people. And we can't care more than they care. So this is high on our agenda. But in the meantime, what we're trying to do is address the humanitarian consequences through an intense program.
The Assistant Secretary of State also says the U.S. is working closely with the Nigerian government to control violence by Boko Haram in West Africa, especially on what she called capacity training.
We know that training is important, and training doesn't provide an immediate solution to the problem. But for the military and for the other government agencies to be effective, they have to be well-trained. We need to do more. The Nigerian government needs to do more in working with the police because it is not the military's job to provide the immediate security in villages once the military kicks Boko Haram out and people try to return to their villages. They need a security service in the form of well-trained policemen who know how to deal with this kind of security.
Linda Thomas-Greenfield added she believes Obama initiatives in Africa will continue under any new administration next year. She says all of the programs enjoy bipartisan support in the U.S. Congress.
Can Kenyan businesses are expected to face challenges in 2016 from terrorism, corruption, a precarious judiciary, and the upcoming general elections, according to global business risk consultancy Control Risks. The firm held its Kenya launch today to release the findings of its Risk Map 2016 report. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
The threat of terror attacks is one of the key risks of doing business in Kenya, according to Control Risks, a global consultancy firm that has released its 2016 report highlighting for private and public organizations what it considers some of the most significant trends in global risk. East Africa senior analyst Paul Gabriel says the perception of East Africa as being negatively impacted by terrorism affects the business community and the region's economy.
But there isn't necessarily always a well-understood differentiation between different parts of Kenya. So you might have a company operating in Nairobi and therefore being perhaps not so much exposed as a company operating along the Somali border, but an outside client, an outside customer might not necessarily understand that.
However, Gabriel emphasized that these current dynamics may change as terrorist groups alter their tactics.
Just because those groups don't operate in the big economic hubs in East Africa right now doesn't mean that their evolution will not lead to them becoming strong enough to regain that capability again.
Control Risks analysts say the politicization of the anti-graft narrative is increasing ahead of Kenya's 2017 elections, and so any enforcement of anti-graft laws will be, or will be perceived to be, politically skewed.
So we find that more and more politicians, more and more presidents are being elected on an anti-corruption campaign. At the same time, we see that those vested interests, the interests that exist in the political and the business environment, mean that actual progress in combating corruption is still very slow.
According to the report, global risks to doing business also include terrorism, as well as the Syrian crisis, cybercrime, and the future of the European Union. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
And in Kenya, six elephants have died in 1 week under unclear circumstances. Some conservationists suspected the animals were poisoned. Mohammed Yusuf has more from Nairobi.
The six elephants were found dead in three wildlife refuges in Narok County, southwest Kenya. The animals all died between February 1st and 6th. Kenya Wildlife Service spokesman Paul Gitau tells VOA that investigators are trying to establish the cause of the deaths.
Samples have been taken of all the six of them, because another male now was found on the 5th of February, and that was in Mara North Conservancy. Samples have been taken and taken to Nakuru for analysis. They are analyzing. They don't seem to suspect any particular cause of it, so we are waiting for them to really give us the conclusion.
According to Gitau, the animals did not have any physical injuries. Some conservationists suspect the elephants may have been poisoned, and government officials have called on investigators to look into that possibility. Residents of Mara, a game reserve area that borders Tanzania, have complained in the past of wild animals destroying their crops and killing domestic animals. In December last year, three lions died of poisoning in the same area. Two people were arrested in connection with that incident. Gitau knows that at this time of the year, there's usually less conflict between the locals and animals.
The human wildlife conflict cases there in that particular area for around this period wasn't reported to be acute, so we don't think that there would have been that kind of reaction. But we are not quick to jump to any conclusion at the moment until we get those results.
Investigators are also looking at the local environment to see if the grass, crops and water the animals consume may have been toxic. The elephants also face threats from poachers who kill the animals for their ivory, but in these cases, the elephant's tusks were intact. For the moment, the deaths remain a mystery. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A new UN report says female genital mutilation and cutting, or FGMC, is a worldwide practice afflicting tens of millions of women and girls with greatly diminished sexual sensation and often lifelong emotional and psychological scars. The report says while FGMC is performed worldwide, the problem is most pervasive in Africa. In Sudan, Eritrea, Mali, Sierra Leone, Djibouti, and Guinea, for example, more than 80% of females males between the ages of 15 and 49 have undergone the procedure, often without anesthesia. To find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Arslana Suleiman, the U.S. State Department's acting liaison to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, a 57-member international body that has outlawed the practice. Suleiman began by pointing out that female circumcision, as it's sometimes called, is a cultural tradition, not a religious one.
Certainly, there's no mention of the practice in Islam or Christianity or in the texts. Now, there are a lot of communities that happen to be Christian or Muslim who engage in the practice, but the origin of the practice doesn't have to do with the religion. It has to do with that community's traditional practices that usually predated the religion. The practice goes back for thousands of years, so it actually predates most of the religions that are practiced in Africa and the Middle East and Asia today. And in that respect, religious leaders have an important voice in clarifying that.
What exactly is female genital mutilation? What do they actually do to girls?
There's a range of practices, really. In a nutshell, female genital mutilation or cutting is the cutting or excision or mutilation of the female genitalia. They're usually cutting the clitoris area. Usually this practice occurs at a very young age. A lot of the stories that we hear happen to girls as young as 4 years old, where they don't really have knowledge of what's happening to them. A lot of people in the tradition, they talk about it as this is sort of a rite of passage for women or girls. But one of the other justifications that is sometimes used is that it can repress the female sexual drive, and that therefore will help them remain a virgin until they're married.
It also compromises their sexual pleasure and sensation, right?
Exactly, yes. Not only does this cause physical trauma to the women and girls who undergo it, but also it can lead to psychological problems later, and it can cause problems in marriages later because it does reduce or even eliminate at times the sexual pleasure that people can have through intercourse. There is no justification for the practice. Unlike male circumcision, which does have health benefits according to the WHO and other leading international health organizations, female genital mutilation does not have any health benefits. In fact, it can lead to severe health complications and problems.
Now, how widespread is this practice?
It depends on the communities you're looking at. You know, in certain parts of West Africa, there is a high prevalence that can reach sometimes up to 90% in certain communities. And that's also the case in certain countries in East Africa. But it's not just an issue that's in Africa. It's also an issue that we see in the Middle East and Asia. And we also see it in immigrant communities, including in the West.
I noticed in the White House statement condemning this practice that somehow it was an empowerment issue. Can you kind of explain the connection between the empowerment of girls and women and refraining from this practice?
Well, you can say, you know, a female's control over her own body is really the ultimate example of one's independence, right? So if you are imposing a practice on someone at an age where they can't really consent, and in a way that can really have a psychological effect on that person's sense of independence or control over their own body, it certainly does get to issues of empowerment. And so one of the key aspects of some of the campaigns that focus on ending FGM is to increase the education and awareness at young ages. It certainly is a difficult battle, but that's one of the interesting things about the practice is that oftentimes men in the community have no idea about the practice, or that people in the community, whether it's someone's aunt or a grandmother, may have a plan to do that to their daughter. So oftentimes fathers have been allies in this battle to really be advocates for the girls and women. But you also often need the legal element so that there are some oversight by government involved and some potential sanctions involved, because there are individuals who sometimes have a monetary incentive within the practice itself. But I think this is also part of a building new traditions as well.
That was Arsalan Suleiman, the U.S. State Department's acting special envoy to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. Suleiman spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Amihi Suhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A UN official says there is no evidence that Burundi security officials or political opposition recruiters are operating in refugee camps in the region. The U.S. is encouraging both sides in the South Sudan conflict to work towards peace. And in Kenya, six elephants have died in 1 week under unclear circumstances. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
A new Afrobarometer survey shows a decline in support for democracy in South Africa amid growing discontent in how it's being implemented. Multiracial democracy began in 1994, but despite promise and hope, the country in recent years has faced political turmoil, high unemployment, corruption scandals, and a lack of basic services. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Afrobarometer conducted its survey of South Africans between August and September of last year. Sibusi Sangomo is the organization's communications coordinator for Southern Africa.
We looked at democracy this time around, and we found that South Africans have actually grown more dissatisfied with the state of the country's democracy in general. The outright support for democracy has actually declined from 2011. And a majority of citizens are actually saying that they'd be willing to give up elections in favor of a non-elected government that would provide basic services.
Besides being dissatisfied with how democracy has been implemented, Ngomo says they're not very happy with their leaders either.
People are basically disappointed and disapprove across the board, from the president down to local councillors and members of parliament.
One of the recent scandals involves President Jacob Zuma spending $20 million for upgrades at one of his residences. The Afrobarometer official quotes former U.S. President Bill Clinton, who defined the main issue in his campaign by saying, "It's the economy, stupid."
That's where the issue is, and the economy is not being doing well. The service levels that people have been receiving, remember we had an electricity crisis for some time last year and the year before that. So those things are having an impact because people in South Africa are associating and have always associated to a certain extent that democracy will bring good things for the people in the country, including services.
For example, he says, someone living in a shack in a township, long without electricity or running water, may wonder how important his or her vote is.
Those things will tell me, well, maybe the system is not working. Because I go and vote every 5 years, but what has changed? Well, there has been change, but I don't think it's gone far enough. But also, people are now looking at the quality of service that they receive. So, for instance, somebody can have access to water, but they might have to share a tap with 10 other people.
The Afrobarometer survey also shows fewer people are going to vote on election days. Ngomo says opinions on democracy in South Africa varied among demographic groups.
The support for it is higher on average amongst people who are actually better educated, who are rural, who are younger and black. When we look at alternatives to democracy, for instance, South Africans in general will tell you they don't want one man rule, they don't want to return to apartheid, one party rule or military rule. But the most interesting finding we got was that 44% of white South Africans reject a hypothetical return to apartheid, but 30% would support such an initiative, and another 26% are ambivalent, or they said they don't know.
The survey shows only 49% of white South Africans support democracy. Ngomo calls those findings worrying. The figure is higher among those who are mixed race, 57%. Some 56% of Indian and South Asians in the country support democracy. Percentages are much higher among black South Africans. When asked about migrants and asylum seekers, whites and the opposition Democratic Alliance Party were more likely to block their entry into the country. Ruling ANC party supporters favored it. However, support for the ANC itself has declined among Indians and mixed-race voters. The Afrobarometer communications coordinator says the survey results could reflect growing pains in a still young democracy. But he says people are expressing themselves, and that's a good thing for democracy. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations reports 1.25 million people die in road crashes every year. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva. The United Nations says its road safety measures could save millions of lives.
The UN Economic Commission for Europe reports road crashes are the number one cause of death among people aged 15 to 29. The ECE, which regulates and sets road and vehicle safety standards, says another 20 to 50 million people worldwide are injured in these accidents. It says 90% of the 1.25 million road deaths worldwide occur in low- and middle-income countries, although they account for only 54% of the world's vehicles. It notes Africa has the highest fatality rate, representing 43% of road traffic victims. UNECE Executive Secretary Christian Fries Bach says these deaths and injuries result in tremendous loss for grieving families and severe economic costs for society. He says societies have to pay the health costs of people who are badly injured and can no longer work and be productive. He says ways to avoid road crashes are known, and the auto industry knows how to produce safe cars, which are universally sold in Europe, North America, and other developed countries.
But when they sell the same car in Africa and Latin America, they take out the safety features. They take out the airbags, they weaken the frame, they produce cheap cars that look exactly like the cars we see on the roads in Europe, but when people crash, they get killed.
Bach says manufacturers can implement key safety measures in their vehicles without significant cost. He says a package of measures that can save lives, including airbags, autonomous braking systems, and seat belts, would cost less than $200 per car. ECE Chief Bach notes too many pedestrians in Africa lose their lives because roads do not have simple safety measures such as proper crossing points. He notes the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and other development institutions and agencies that pay the cost of infrastructure in Africa should insist road safety measures be implemented. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Turkish President Erdogan has criticized the United Nations for demanding that Turkey open its border to more Syrian refugees fleeing the bombing of Aleppo. The AP reports that he accused the UN of being an ineffective leader in the refugees crisis that has besieged Turkey and many countries of the European Union. Turkey is home for more than 2.5 million Syrians fleeing 4 years of warfare. The majority of the million-plus refugees flowing into Europe in the past 14 months have come through Turkey from Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan. EU officials have asked Turkey to slow the number of refugees moving from Turkey to Greece across the Aegean Sea. The EU has offered Turkey $3.4 billion to take care of Syrian refugees.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA News Feeds. voanews.com.